Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, everybody. This is episode 182. Now, this episode, I think you're going to really, really enjoy. It's a guest episode. Last week, we've had a busy week filming, and that's why, apologies, we actually couldn't get a podcast finished last week. We apologize, sorry. And also, that's why, actually, we didn't release any videos last week. We pushed hard in making brand new content that's going to be coming to the channel over the next few weeks. And we just needed that little bit of respite to make sure we filmed plenty of content. And therefore, it goes into the editing factory to get edited, ready for your enjoyment coming soon. Now, while we were down in London, we filmed some fantastic content. Again, that's all going to be coming really soon. Lots of Break 75, some other challenges, etc. And on one of the days, we went to Woburn Golf Club. Now, Woburn is an amazing place. It's got three golf courses. The Marquis course is a championship golf course, which I do a Break 75 on. Check that out, coming soon. It's also got the Duke's course, which is amazing, and the Duchess course, which is one of the hardest golf courses I've ever played in my life because it's so tight. Down there as well, they've got this phenomenal short game area called the Tavistock. And one of the golf coaches there, Dan Greaves, who's been a golf coach for many, many years, coached some of the best players in the world, he has now specialised in becoming a short game coach. Now, as you know from watching the videos, how do we say it nicely? My short game isn't my strength, let's put it that way. There's been some instances of fat shots, thin shots. It's not been pretty. Now, over the last few months, in fairness, it has got a little bit better. My chipping, my short game has actually got a little bit better. However, it can be improved. Now, I had a lesson off Dan. That video is going to be coming very soon. It is one of the best lessons I've ever had. Now, you've seen on the channels recently, I've been very fortunate to have a putting lesson off Brad Faxon, which was phenomenal. A full swing lesson off Claude Hardman, which again was brilliant. And now a short game lesson off Dan Greaves. To be honest, there's no real excuse why I shouldn't be shooting 65 in every single video. That's down to me now and to put the work and practice in. But in this episode, we actually sat down with Dan, me and Guy. We were there together with Dan as a guest. Guy's unfortunately off this week on holiday, so that's why he's not with me this morning. But we sit down with Dan and talk about the short game, the players he's worked with, the misconceptions about short game, and why he believes it's the best aspect of golf. Like, why he loves the short game so much. He's brought a book out as well, which I would highly recommend checking out. It's called Three Releases. We talk about it in the podcast as well. Now, just a quick warning. This podcast, because we had to film it on location, it wasn't in our beautiful studio we've got here, we had to film it outside and we record it outside near the putting green, which to some degree, for your viewing pleasure, if you're going to be watching it on YouTube channel, looks fantastic. Like, it's gorgeous, beautiful day next to the putting green. However, like a lot of golf courses, there's lots of things going on. There's greenkeepers, there's planes going across, there's a little bit of wind noise. It's very listenable and watchable. It really is, but it's not to our perfect normal standards. Just bear that in mind. You might just have to lower the volume a little bit if you're in your car or out for a walk, because it's just, like I said, it's a bit of wind noise. But the information you receive in this podcast is brilliant. So sit back, enjoy the guest episode with Dan Greaves. Be sure to like him and follow him on his Instagram page. It's blown up recently. I'll put a link down in the description. And one last thing as well, thank you so much for all the donations I received over the last couple of weeks after the London Marathon. We've now hit over £10,000 raised for It's Never You. So thank you so much, everybody. Right, without further ado, this is guest episode with short game expert Dan Greaves. And enjoy, because I think you're going to really enjoy this one. So, as you can see, miraculously, we just got here to Woburn. Beautiful day.
Lovely.
We're outside, so just a bit of a warning. There might be a little bit of wind noise, but we couldn't resist just enjoying this beautiful setting.
This is, we say this a lot when we go to new venues, but this is actually becoming already one of my favourite places we've been to.
That's good.
But the short game area, and it's very fitting having our guest on today, the short game area, I would say, is the best in the world. The best I've been to, for sure.
So, Dan, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure.
This is your home.
Yeah.
And it has been for 17 years. Same.
17 years I've been here. I've been here 2006, yeah. Crazy.
I mean, we'll throw in some imagery of the short game area. Is it Tavistock short game
area? The Tavistock short game area is its official name, yeah.
It's cut out of these wonderfully tall, beautiful pine trees, and the green is two huge greens with loads of different slopes and angles that you can hit from. The whole venue here is actually really nice. The three golf courses, I've actually been lucky enough to play all three of them.
Yep.
We're actually about to go and play one of them this afternoon in the Bray 75, which will be coming very soon. But we've had an exciting morning, Dan.
Mm-hmm. We've been asked, haven't we? Yeah.
I've had a lesson off you,
yeah,
which was very, very interesting. Because obviously you're a golf coach, but in the last kind of few years, your Instagram, so in the last 18 months, your Instagram has blown up. Yeah. You're on 119,000 followers now.
Okay, yeah.
He's coming for you, Rick. He's on his way.
Way to go.
And you've really kind of taken this really cool role in the kind of the short game golf coach. I know, but you are just a golf coach, but short game is a huge passion for you, and you've kind of branched that out into social media.
Yeah.
Where did this all come from? How did this kind of all start, really?
I've played golf since I was like 4 or 5 years old, and I've always like loved the short game. I do think golfers kind of evolve around how they play the game. So I've never been the greatest driver of the ball. Short and wild's not a great combination off the tee, is it? So I then tend to miss a few more greens than most pros would. So I quite quickly learned if I was going to compete, I've really got to try and embrace that.
Yeah.
And become a good short game player. So I worked very hard on my own technique, managed to get a decent level as a player, and then obviously really got into the coaching side of things. And it was really, I guess, back in about 2008, 2009, I started working with a guy called Steve Luton, who's doing really well now on the Asian Tour. He's done well in some of the Saudi events as well. He got his European Tour card. I was there with him. And then Charlie Hull, who was a member at the time here, still a member actually, her dad, David, approached me about doing a little bit of short game work with her because she was a fantastic talent from an early age. Mm. And she was about 15. She was about to turn pro. I think she went to tour school when she was still 15.
Wow.
And her short game wasn't, I mean, she ripped it TD Green, amazing. I mean, I remember seeing when she was 12, 13, incredible. But she didn't really have an idea for short game. But like we spoke about today, Rick, I think a lot of players are really strong in compression in the long game, and they struggle to get the finesse and the touch and feel in short game. And she was definitely a little bit in that camp, particularly with pitching. So, he asked me to look at a pitch and it went really well. We started making some really big improvements pretty quickly because I think with short game, it's very different. When you're competing on a national level, you need to have an okay short game. But when you start wanting to compete internationally and you've played great courses all around the world, you see you get asked very different questions, don't you? When you're in these runoff areas, you've got to sort of play it up and spin it. And she's now quite have these shots. So, I started really, really working with Charlie and then she turned pro at 16. And I don't know if many people noticed, her first five events on the European Tour, she finished second in all five.
What?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Amazing, yeah. So she went second all the way through, five events in a row. And then, suddenly she's in the Solheim Cup at 17. And I kind of knew short game. I knew what good looked like. and I knew what the ball flight should look like. Didn't necessarily know the mechanics of it inside out. And because of the success with Charlie, I was doing like clinics with her and magazine articles. And I didn't really, no, if I'm being truthful, absolutely know it inside out. So I really started this journey of exploring it and kind of experimenting and really learning it and digging into it until I knew it inside out.
Well, with and, that then, is that you kind of just from trial and error with students, or is it kind of research? Is it reading books? Is it speaking to other golf coaches? How do you start to understand the short game more?
Yeah, I think learning, a lot of people think learning, you can do it all by reading a book. And I think there's an element of that. So I kind of studied it, but I like studying by watching. So I'll be watching the greats. I mean, I was brought up watching golf in the 80s and early 90s. So Seve was like a massive, massive hero of mine. I just love the way he played short game shots. So I've been doing a lot of studying, watching, and a lot of my own practice as well.
Yeah.
Because I came in 2006, and the questions you get asked around these courses, which you'll get asked this afternoon on the Marcus, right? These big affairs, you've got to play different shots.
Yeah.
So if you like the old-fashioned way of chipping, which I was brought up being taught to do, which was ball back, lot of loft, going to drive the hands in and keep everything low and on the ground as soon as possible, whilst there's still merits to that in some certain in some circumstances, you've got to get more versatility playing courses like this. And then I started having to work on my game to be able to play these shots and manage to do it. So yeah, a lot of it is through, I think, your own trial and error. And then obviously as technology went on, got into TrackMan. TrackMan sort of validated some of my findings about how you can sort of release a club slightly differently to get different spins and different runouts. And then using things like wrist sensors and all that to really validate. And I soon realized I was onto something, and actually it all made sense because what I thought worked actually was backed up by the data as well, which is what you need, yeah.
Because, I mean, we've talked about this on the podcast. Growing up, and you've just alluded to it there, chipping style was very, very different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, it was back foot.
Mm-hmm. Open the stance up. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of shots were played differently.
Yeah.
Like bunker shots was always very much open the stance, open the face, cut along the line of your feet. You now start to hear players talk about drawing chip shots.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, they're trying to purposely hit that draw type feel.
Shallowing out versus how steep it used to be.
Yeah, yeah. We had a little go of that on the short game before, and it felt really good. You see now bunker shots being played much more square,
mm-hmm.
you know, everything being aimed at more at the target. Has this happened by accident? Is it this, have other people, kind of pros and good players, done similar things to you, and almost the self-discovery mm-hmm. then was backed up by TrackMan and GC Quads and launch mm-hmm. monitors? And how much also has the equipment made a massive factor mm-hmm. in this as well? Like, you know, bounce many years ago was nothing that we'd ever really hear of. You thought a bounce was just what you got off a cart path when you hit a bad ball. But like bounce now has become such a big thing.
Yeah, sure.
And
all of these things. So has it been this kind of blend of everything? And what would you say has been the most influential in the
I think it's a combination of a few things. I think, like everything in life, generally things get better. Like the learning gets better, like the understanding of it. So the understanding of it gets better. But I think actually the condition, generally, bunkers are much better than they were 30, 40 years ago when it was been prolifically taught, okay? Because the sand would be, there'd be less sand, okay? So when you got less sand, it helps to actually swing a little bit across because it's a steepener. In short game, you've got shallowers and steepeners. So when there's less sand, if you dig across, it's a way of elevating the ball. So even if today, if I've got a really bare lie, I'll kind of go back to the old school methods because it actually works for that.
There's a purpose for
it. So there's lots more sand now. When there's lots more sand, you've got to be shallower. So it makes sense to use more bounce and stand squarer. Also, sand wedges, like you say, are so much better now.
Mm.
You know, if you look at sand wedges back in the day, they were kind of very, very basic in their design. And the good news is these days, amateurs can buy exactly the same wedges that the tour pros are using. Yeah. Whereas even 10, 15 years ago, they'd have very different looking grinds, like you said. You know, the grind is so different. So I mean, it's a combination of technology in both the sand and the actual golf clubs, and just better understanding that actually playing it squarer, you also get a much straighter spin on the ball as well. Because when you cut across it, firstly, you've got to hit it about three times harder if there's a lot of sand, right? Yeah. So that's hard to judge distance. If you're coming in squarer, the sand is what explodes the ball out squarer. And then if it's landing, you've got a bit of spin, it's actually got straight spin on it. So you've actually got a chance of holding a bunker shot. If you think about trying to bring it in from the side into a hole, that's quite difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard to judge.
Yeah, so that's why you'll see it much squarer these days. Yeah.
I don't think there's a guest or anyone we've had on where I'm literally hanging on every word.
Well, yeah.
Because for me, it certainly is my own self-discovery of short game. Sorry if there is a bit of background noise, everybody. We're outside today and there's greenkeepers, everything else, but hopefully it's, you'll still enjoy the episode. For me, it's been my biggest bugbear for a while over the last few years. And it's been the thing that's probably, when you're not good at something, you end up putting it off. Well, I certainly do. Like, I'm much more comfortable going to a driving range and hit a load of driver shots because I'm actually comfortable doing that.
Yeah, it's like me putting off playing a long iron.
Yeah.
Practicing long iron play, you know.
Players typically practice the strengths, don't they?
Well, coming on to that quite nicely then. Well, obviously, as a golf coach, you don't need to be an amazing golfer. We hear that a lot. Now, is it Claude Harmon that he's off like nine or something?
He is openly admits that he's not the best golfer.
And that makes sense because ultimately the tour pros need coaches and you can't. There's no one better than John Rahm, so he has to have a coach that's kind of worse than him, if you like. But one thing with yourself that I've noticed from a few of your Instagram videos and today in particular is you actually are a wizard with the wedges. And I think that must help because when you're explaining shots to students, whether they be high handicap amateurs or elite tour pros, when you can show them a method, execute it yourself flawlessly, that must help you to then get the trust of your clients.
If you can demonstrate the shot, I think if you can demonstrate a shot as well as coach, I think that's immensely powerful.
Yeah.
Because they can watch you do it. And a lot of people are just, everyone's different learners, aren't they? Some people like to get really into detail. Some people like just be more visual. So I've seen someone the other day and I was playing these shots and I was sort of saying, you know, how are you doing that? He says, I don't know, I'm just copying you.
Yeah.
So I think that's quite interesting. Yeah, so the ability to play the shots is key. And I do kind of like pride myself that, you know, if I was going to play with a tour pro, I'd talk to lots of tour pros and we go out and play, they're going to absolutely just destroy me tee to green.
Yeah.
But I still round the green, back myself to be at least the same as them, if not beat them.
That's class.
And, you know, when we have chipping comps, I am able to beat them, you know, at least half the time.
That's good.
And but like you, all I really practice is short game. Actually, I just practice my long game as well. But yeah. I love short game. I just love it. I love missing greens. It sounds really daft. I only probably hit 8 or 9 greens around.
On purpose.
I'd much rather miss a green than hit to 30 feet. Because don't get me wrong, I'm disappointed when the ball's like curving away from the target. But as soon as I'm walking up to my ball, I'm getting really genuinely excited about what shot I'm going to play, how I'm going to be able to show off and play the shot, you know, and the challenge of it. I love it.
I couldn't be more polar opposite.
You put her out no matter where the ball goes anyway, so you put in no matter what.
When I see that ball missing the green, I'm like, oh, there goes my par. At the moment anyway, but after my lesson this morning, hopefully might change.
We play a lot of links courses recently and you know, certainly, obviously, over here, there's so many different ways to play shots around a links course. If you're coaching someone or you were there yourself on a links course, do you see it? There is just one shot to play, or do you see it, there's different ways? It could be the bump and run across the floor, or you should actually loft it up, or is there a right and wrong shot, or is it just finding shots that you're comfortable with?
Yeah, it's totally right and wrong. The big thing is links courses actually can play very differently. I know the actual design is exactly the same, but like the firmness of the turf, sometimes some links courses you play, they've got a little give still in the turf, isn't it? So you can still, like we did today, you can do your release twos where you release the club a little bit more, where the butt is kind of pointing back at the belt buckle, where the bounce is sliding a bit more. But if, let's say you're playing like Hoylake in 06, where it was just absolutely burnt, you would definitely have to make adjustments there. You know, you would have to take the bounce off. So there are a number of ways of doing that. You could do more like what I call a release one, which is more the front hit release. You can start, like we said earlier, the grinds are so great now, you can put toes down. Generally, a lot of clubs have like toe relief, so you can put the toe lower, and then you can still play it with a bit of release and get more spin. So reading the lie is actually, I think, the most poorest aspect that amateurs do in short game. Like, they don't read the lie very well.
Yeah.
And then they'll try and play a shot that the eye sees that they want to play because they've got to go over something, for example, but they'll just... the lie won't allow them to play it.
It's absolutely key.
Honestly, if you can learn that, it's massive.
I think sometimes you're already preset what shot you're going to play.
Yeah.
And you've not looked whether it's sat down, whether it's sat 100%. Up, whether, you know, you just don't do it. And you're right with a lot of, how many times do you see, and to be honest, some golf courses in the UK and the US force you to pick a club before you get over there because you've got to park your buggy at one and you just grab a wedge going, oh, that's the club I'm going to use. When you get over there, you go, actually, this lie is not going to be allowing me to hit that shot.
Sure.
It's quite interesting. Do you remember the Tiger Woods tailor-made wedge that came out that was designed just for Tiger Woods?
Yeah.
That, if I'm not mistaken, had lots of different bounces and grinds depending on how he set it up.
Yes, right. You could angle it differently, or toe or heel down, or lay it back, and the way it was ground, you could still get the relief to be able to play from different lies. Yeah,
it's quite a minefield, though, isn't it?
And I'd almost relate it to recently. I bought a battery powered screwdriver. Okay.
Okay.
A little handheld battery powered screwdriver. Okay. Okay. And I went to the DIY shop. I don't know about. I don't know anything. Light. Okay. So I'm looking along. I'm going, which one do I get here? Right. And there was one where the middle section would twist, and then you could have a different head.
Right.
So it could be a flat head, it could be a cross, it could be a Allen key.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to say there is that tool now allows me to do any job around the house.
Yeah.
I suppose you wedge, a bit like Tiger's wedge with the different bounces, different grinds. That's his multi-purpose wedge that you can do a lot of different things
with. He's versatile. You've got to build yourself a versatile short game. Like I've got three wedges in my bag, but really I've got kind of 25 really in terms of how you can use them so differently. But very, very few golfers, I think, understand how they can do that. I mean, I do short game schools now twice a week, and they've got all these fantastic clubs, and I spend most of the time educating them. You can use that bit or that bit.
Yeah.
Understand you can do that or that. And it's just having that knowledge can transform you as a golfer.
Question then for you. Obviously, it's a bit, even at kind of my decent level, I get a little bit overwhelmed by, obviously, you've got lofts, you've got grinds, you've got bounces, you've got different finishes and wedges. Like the Titleist Vokey website is a bit of a minefield. Now, there obviously is ways you can kind of roughly fit yourself, or you can go for a fitting as well. But it feels to me that there's not anywhere really, maybe this place, the Titleist Centre, is an exception to some degree, but there's not many places you can go and try wedges actually out and get fit and have the different lofts and grinds there. Like, how would you recommend an amateur golfer get fit for wedges? It is quite difficult.
It is difficult. You do need a facility. I think you do have to play off grass.
Yeah. I agree.
I think that's absolutely vital.
Yeah.
The mat tends to flatter things.
And similar grass to what your home golf course would be,
ideally,
I guess.
Ideally. I mean, I'm not trying to plug Woburn, but when people have wedge fittings here, they'll come down and the guys will take the whole bag of wedges down to the short game area and they'll spend an hour playing different shots and you can try them all. And that, I think that's like the ultimate way of having a wedge fitting. I would also say with wedge fitting, I think too much emphasis is placed on the gapping, as in the full shot gapping.
Yes.
Like trying to get that right. It's important, but I think it's more important to get the right loft and bounce and grind for around the green. Like you can chip in around the green, you've got to get it absolutely bang on.
Yeah.
In terms, I think if you're good enough, even if you're not, you learn it to be able to play more like three-quarter shots. If you've got a bigger gap between, say, your 46 and your 52, that's fine. Learn to play a three-quarter 46. Yeah. And make sure your 52, your 56 and 60s are absolutely right for you.
Yeah.
Like a little bit more loft around the green, like having a 52 rather than a 50, for example, would be better for you to chip with than maybe a 50. And this is what the player needs to figure out.
Yeah.
What would you, obviously you're very, you know, your heart is set on short game. Do you think too many general golfers focus more on a driver fitting and neglect the wedge fittings?
Yeah, without doubt, without doubt. Very, very few people get fit for the wedges. They'll buy them off the shelf.
It's
a lot of people's last thought, isn't it, really?
But it's harder to get fit, though, as well, isn't it?
It is harder, but I would also say the big one, I would say that always get your wedges just at least 1 degree flatter, maybe two in your 60. Then, so let's say you're 1 degree upright in your irons, you want to go 1 degree flat in your 60.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, just go flatter because the heel part of a wedge is the dangerous bit. That can kind of dig in and turn. The toe is designed to slide. It's a much more friendlier approach. A bit like you were doing it. You're saying that you found a way around it by putting the toe down for your chipping. That's because the toe's designed to slide. So you'd much rather have a toe down wedge than a toe up wedge.
Wow.
So if you just did that, that would really help.
You've taught, obviously, Charlie Hull and some other great players. And you've had some great victories as well. Can you talk us through some of your kind of highlights with teaching actual tour pros?
With players, yeah. Obviously, I taught Georgia Hall. That was a good journey because I started teaching Georgia. I think she was about 450 in the world and ended up getting to number six.
Wow.
So all the way through from European Tour to winning a major. She was fantastic.
Were you coaching her then as well?
Yeah, that's right. I was coaching her all of her game, actually, swing, putting, and
short game. How did that feel as a golf coach?
Oh, amazing. Amazing, yeah. I was a bit nervous that last day, but it was so, particularly the journey, because I remember when I first started coaching, she was doing okay on a European tour, but she was on the cut line quite a lot. She was always very gritty. Just on the cut line, she'd make it. So I knew she had it like mentally amazing. And we just improved a few things and just quietly improved every year. So if you look at her kind of like order of merit, it just kept stepping and just improving every year and obviously won the major. Not working together anymore, but she's absolutely delighted that she's She went off a little bit and she's come back. She's back to top 10 in the world now. But I feel like my job's done there. She's done great and we move on, you know.
You got your major win.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be a silly question, but as a coach then, would you rather have a client that kind of gets better year on year or someone that dramatically gets better? Because I think if you get better very quickly, could that then almost be that you could go off the rails quite quickly as well? Whereas if you get better just year on year, that's almost
I think
more...
Yeah, I think year on year, it's showing like progression that can be sustained.
Yes.
Like if you suddenly have a fantastic win and you're up there, and we've seen it a number of times, haven't we, with golfers, that they have a big win and they drop off.
So, is that consistency of year on year?
Just getting I think better the only player that's kind of broke that mold a little bit at the moment is Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's come out of almost nowhere.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
First time I've seen him stayed there.
Yeah.
And he will, looks like he will do.
Who would you say has got the best short game on tour?
Today?
As a professional golfer.
Today.
Right now.
Is Cam Smith on tour?
Yeah. Cam Smith is on a tour, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think Cam Smith, I love how he plays his short game shots.
Yeah.
I think St. Andrews, I thought he was amazing with his wedge play. And he's comfortable going in all trajectories. I think he rotates really ball beautifully. He's great. And John Rahm as well. I love how he plays it as well. Yeah. He's quite equally just drills it in a bit more.
Yeah,
spin,
he plays it a bit drilly, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I'm intrigued to know what you think of like someone like Jason Day's short game, because that's it seems very very straight armed and not much wrist movement.
Mm-hmm. It works really well for him. You know, he's wide. He maintains his radius really well when you do that. That's the, when you start using your wrist a little bit, you run the risk of not maintaining that. And he holds it. He kind of like goes wide and he just holds the loft, right? And he does it really well. I wouldn't particularly recommend it for everyone, because I think you've got to have a little bit more softness. You've got to start allowing the club to fall if you want to get the versatility. I think if most golfers who are less talented than him did it, I think they become very one-dimensional.
Which is most people listening and watching.
Yes. Yeah.
Is less talented than Jason
Day. Indeed.
So as your Instagram and social media have been blowing up, because as mentioned, you've just got to 119,000 followers, which I'm sure after this podcast, hopefully be sure to check out Dan on all of his social media. That started like 18 months ago and you were on what, a couple of thousand?
Yeah, or? You just sat a couple of thousand for a while and I thought I'd better try and do something about this.
And in conjunction with this, you've kind of now been known for this kind of these three releases.
Mm-hmm.
So release 1, 2, and 3, which again, in the video that I did with Dan this morning, you'll see that coming out soon. But also you've brought in with a book as well. Mm. Like, how did that kind of all come into play? Was that all planned? Did you have the book in the back of your mind and the social media just kind of fit in? Or was it, how did that all work?
Yeah, the social media, started working on that. And I just try and keep it as natural as I can in social media. It's just me just giving a lesson, right? It's nothing too staged. So that was growing all the time. And really, I'd always wanted to write a book because I thought I was sort of slightly onto something with short game in terms of I was using the terms release 1, 2, 3 with golfers, I've been using that for about 7 or 8 years with golfers, and they liked it, and I thought it made sense to them. But I didn't want to start using it on social media, and I didn't want other coaches to start saying it was their
thing.
So I basically, I thought, well, write a book. It's an indirect way of copywriting it. I know if coaches want to use it, fantastic, brilliant, use it.
But it's
my language. Yeah. That's all I wanted to do.
Makes sense.
Really why I wrote the book. I didn't write the book to sell loads. I just wrote it as say, look, this is kind of my system. That's why I did it. And really, the lockdown thing really was the reason, because it was the winter lockdown where there's 3 months where it was just horrid, wasn't it? I thought, you know, it was either getting involved with a homeschooling or it was write a book. And I just sat in the office and I just wrote the book.
Wow.
And got it done. And I think without lockdown, I probably would never have got it done.
Did you find that process quite hard?
Yeah, it was quite nice initially when you start writing, but then you just got to pore over every word and just make sure. I've tried to strip it back, and the feedback I've had from the book has been great. The fact that everyone says this language is like really, really simple. And I take that as a compliment.
Yes.
Because I've tried to make it that anyone can understand it.
Yeah,
I could have used it. And you see a lot of coaches using like really long, fancy anatomical kind of words, but I've just tried to keep it as simple as possible so anyone can relate to it.
Well, that's the big thing. We have something with that Rick's coaching videos. We want them to be very broad and easy to consume, because we have a lot of new golfers and non-golfers watching. I suppose there's more of those people out there than absolute hardcore golfers. Isn't there? If you had a book that was super hard to get your head around, although the information would be great, it might only appeal to X amount of people, but the book that you've done and the way you, like you said as well, the Instagram, it's very natural, very easy to follow, it's very simple, and you feel like a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
I think that's why people like it.
Yeah.
You feel like you're kind of part of the lesson, really.
Yeah.
I suppose you wrote a book for golfers, not for golf coaches.
Yeah.
And that's the difference.
Yeah.
So you can get golf coaching books that are designed for other golf coaches that go really into detail and talk about radial movement and all these other things, where you've actually just gone, no, I'm actually making it
This is for the club golfer.
Yeah.
To really understand it. And just so clear, like the three releases, the way in which you play the shots, golfers have been using these techniques for 200 years.
Mm.
Like, I've not come up with like brand new ways of playing the shot. I might have tweaked them a little bit. I might have just said, look, let's set up this way to play this shot. I think what I've tried to do is create a blueprint so golfers can really understand it. So they know that they're not mixing ingredients up, because short game really is a selection of ingredients, like what hits it high, what hits it low. And I think generally golfers mix them all up. So what I tried to do in the book is make sure if you're playing a low shot, you set up like this, and these are your checkpoints, and this is where you finish with the release point. And it's the same if you want to do like a release two, which is more of a mid-flight high spinner, and a release three if you're really trying to hit it high from a lob shot or a bunker shot. So it's just understanding what are the ingredients, when do I use a shot, and a big part of the book as well is actually on your golfing intelligence, like what I call your golfing IQ, your ability to choose the right shot, read the lie, and make sure you're playing the release correct for the shot you've got. And if you can link in better technique with a better way of thinking, a higher golfing IQ, you can become an amazing short game player. And I don't think it's out of the realms of anyone to try and aim to be a scratch short game player.
Mm.
You've got to kind of separate the handicap. So I like to almost think, what is your handicap as a golfer just on short game?
Yeah,
and it's not a physical act, is it? You don't need to be able to move like Rory.
No.
Or, you know, you don't need to. There's no reason an average kind of golfer cannot become the best short game player in the world.
It's similar with putting.
Really?
It's similar with putting. There's no reason why the most average person could not become the greatest putter in the world.
Absolutely agree. Yeah.
Matt, who does our podcast, has become quite your disciple. And from what I've read online and social media, he's not the only one. Because it seems like you've really opened the eyes of a lot of golfers in this idea that, you know, they've got an understanding. I mean, Matt's been very, very cocky recently about his short game. And we're staying locally and we might have a little chipping comp tonight. So
I think he needs testing, yeah.
That might need testing. But I think what's good about what you're doing, and the lesson I had today, it's that confidence. It's nice to hear it, and the way you simply put it, it kind of makes a lot of sense, and it's easy to understand.
Yeah.
So at the moment, the book's obviously out.
Mm-hmm.
Is it on Amazon?
Yeah.
Is it three releases?
It's called the three releases, the short game system, yeah.
I would highly recommend it. People pick it up. I've got a copy. I'm not a great reader.
And you bought a copy. I didn't send you one, which is that.
I bought a copy. Did you see it on Amazon?
Yeah.
I bought a copy. And then I must admit, I'm not the greatest reader. I think audiobook has to come out next.
I thought about that, but yeah, I don't know how you get across the photo because a lot of it's imagery.
Oh, yeah,
that's a good point. Watch Rick Shields' video with Dan Greaves.
What about a featured film. If you could wrap the whole book up in an hour video, I'm all over it.
That'll be my next project, Rick.
Yeah, I'm too visual. I'm not a reader.
You know, that's definitely true.
Do you find, so most of your clients that come and see you now at the Woburn, because people, you can book a lesson with you and have a lesson here at Woburn with you. What are they coming in saying? What's the most common issue, fault? Is it, because I feel like when I was coaching full time, a golfer would come and say, I'm kind of slicing it. I'm hitting it well enough, but I'm kind of slicing it.
Yeah.
It feels like short game. It's a huge amount of it could be. I'm duffing it. I'm thinning it. I'm shanking it. There seems like there's a lot of issues around short game that players struggle with. What do you find is the most common issues that people come with?
Yeah, so I'd probably group that into two things. Firstly, for the better player, like you, Rick, it's often, as you were doing today, it's kind of quite short in the backswing, quite a linear motion, not really having much rotation, quite a short backswing, and then driving quite hard, so having no release. And then using a lot of loft to offset that.
Yeah.
Right. So it gets quite driving, quite strong, which is good for certain shots, but it's going to make you very one dimensional.
Yeah.
And then for the probably mid higher handicappers, it goes the other way where actually players get quite flippy.
Yeah.
Because they're not really understanding the setup. They're not understanding how the body needs to pivot correctly. So the higher handicapper tends to not move and just flip the hands, and the lower handicapper tends to kind of drive their arms. I would say that's the biggest thing.
Does that really make it easy to coach a high handicapper then? Because they're probably not a million miles
off. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because, good players generally, all good players in long game will create a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
A lot of sort of flexion with the lead wrist as they come into the ball, which is great. Compression is strong. And then they kind of take the same pattern into short game. But what you find in high handicappers, they go the opposite. They almost release it too much.
Yeah.
So it's just getting the right. And then they've got to, I just teach them to understand the different release points. And once they understand that, they know where to go. You've got to understand it yourself. You've got to be able to coach yourself at this game.
Yeah.
That's key.
I feel like with higher handicappers, I'm guessing really your big factor you're trying to get across is controlling the low point.
Yeah, low point.
So a lot of higher handicappers lean back and try and...
Because I think subconsciously they're trying to get in the air with the tilt. So that's why I teach this foot flare. And if you get that foot flare and you sort of push the pressure left, you can create this pivot line that I talk about, which runs from your foot through your knee, hip into shoulder, running through your left ear. And then you've got a line in which you can actually rotate around. So most golfers, the most common fault is the pressure tries to go left with the hips and then the body tilts back as like a byproduct. So
with this in mind, and obviously if someone comes to one of you two guys for a full swing lesson, there's different, obviously people might not be flexible or they might have certain swing characteristics, they just can't change or whatever. But with this then, does that mean pretty much everyone that comes to see you can follow these steps and you can coach kind of one way really?
Great question, I totally agree. I think full swing, I would never, for example, bring out a book saying the long game system.
Yeah.
Right, I just totally disagree with that, right? But I think short game, as I say, it's not a physical act. I can get most people chip in a very similar way. They look very, very similar because you don't need to be built amazingly. You don't need to have amazing flexibility to do it. So I think anyone, absolutely anyone can chip.
So what you're saying then really, none of us here or listening or watching, there's no excuses?
No, you've got to get in the mind. I think it's between the mind.
Yeah. But there's no physical limitation. Correct. But one thing Dan said off camera before we were having a chat, because we said that it's in your head about your chipping, but then you came back to something like, it's not really, it's actually in your technique. Because if your technique's great and you're hitting good shots, then your head's fine.
I say if you're technically good, you're mentally good.
Correct, yeah.
You know, so if your technique's out, it will always show up. It will always show up, particularly when you're under the gun, like it really matters. So, you know, if you can just get your technique right, and I think I've taught you today, Rick, and maybe you tell me, but it's like you've a number of shots today, you hit behind the ball, right? But actually you got it quite close because actually we've just made the club friendlier.
Correct.
Whereas
that's
before,
the game changer.
The way you were chipping, you can chip that way, but you've got to be perfect.
And
you've
if you got are to heavy.
Absolutely perfect. Because if you are heavy, it's going to show. Whereas now, you don't need to be perfect. And I don't know about you, but if I was standing over a chip knowing I didn't need to be perfect, I'm going to be more relaxed than knowing I've got to be perfect.
I suppose a bit like my driving. I don't really worry too much about my driving.
Exactly.
Even though the shots I hit aren't always a perfect strike,
you know
it's all right.
Yeah.
They're down there.
Exactly.
Like, luckily for me, I'm not ever think about topping a drive or really hitting a terrible drive. Well, so I'm very, very, very confident in my drive, like overly confident. because miss hits are just not that terrible.
But what you're saying is, if you're making it now with your new technique, that it makes it more friendly, you've got more room for error. In a sense of analogy form, it's almost like being on a tee and the fairway's getting wider.
Yeah.
You've got more room for
error. Massive margin for error.
Yeah.
And that's what these top guys are doing. You know, I've been around on you know, tournaments, and I promise you, they're missing their chips all the time. They miss it more, but they miss it into 3 feet because they've just got this margin for error. And they're much more talented than the average golfer, right, who's got no margin for error. So we need to get that margin for error as big as possible.
It's really interesting.
Is there another side of the game, let's say now, you've completed chipping? Okay. Is there a secondary aspect of the game that you're as passionate about? Like, does it transcend into putting? Like, are you a huge putting fan? Is there a system for putting that might be down the line?
There probably won't be a system for putting, no. I enjoy coaching putting. I do coach putting. I just personally find it a little bit dull. I'd rather be on the short game area playing all these different shots. So, you know, I enjoy putting, of course, and I'm hoping most of my pupils don't need to putt much, really, because I just, you know, chip it stiff.
Really. If you can get people to chip better,
exactly,
you don't need to putt.
You know what, though, as well, hearing the passion you've got, the knowledge you've got, I know you get a lot of golf coaches who are kind of rounded. I know, again, you still do long game lessons, yeah. But like yourself or a Phil Kenyon, who's a putting coach, yeah. It must be hard to be this much of an expert in every area of the game. Surely there's not many guys who can coach to your level on the short game and on putting and on driving and on iron play.
No. But I actually think we've almost gone too far the other way, where if you're a good player now, you have to have a short game coach or long game coach or whatever, putting coach.
Mental coach.
And all these sort of things. And really, that's only really been the last 5 years that's been the case.
Yeah.
Like, I think some of the success I had with Georgia is I was like, coach her on every part of the game. So she had one voice.
Yeah.
And you don't get seeds thrown in from all over the place. And I do think, I totally agree. I think having the specialism is really useful. But actually, I also think perhaps at times some players go too far and they get too many coaches.
Makes sense.
Well, it's too many voices.
Yeah, totally.
It's how do you prioritise? Because if you're saying, if you're just coaching a player only short game, one, it's the only thing you're bothered about their performance for is their short game. Two, you're trying to drain as much time as you can and say, you need to practice for this amount of time in your short game. Then you have that times five for driving, long game, putting, short game, mental. Yeah. That's like a
PT.
Exactly. And it's really difficult to keep quiet. So I remember there's one player I worked with who was a good player on tour, and chip short game was fantastic, obviously. The chipping was great, but then couldn't hold out from 6 feet. Like, putting was all over the place and had a separate, you know, putting coach or whatever. And it's like really difficult to say, can we have a look at the putting? Because the player's not performing. Yeah, I feel like they're doing my bit well enough. And that's frustrating then, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting one. So I do think there's merit in having one coach.
Yeah.
But equally, obviously, the way it's going, everything's...
Is that the way more guys are on tour going, having separate coaches,
yeah,
though?
Totally, yeah. Yeah.
And have you had any big named players slide into the old DMs and ask for your advice, and anyone you can share any stories of?
Yeah, I do get some. I won't share any names because sometimes it is under the radar, right? They just want me to check. So what I get a lot of is players who want me to check something. So they'll say, can I have a second opinion on this? What do you think on this? So I'll have a look at it on video, and sometimes they come up and we have a look. But thing is, I don't really want to go on tour, so I'm not really interested in going away on tour right now with a young family. So they can come to me, that's fine, but I don't really want to go on tour.
I think you often think that as a golf coach, the dream is to be a tour coach, that's the most elite players on the planet. But actually, like you said, it's a lot of travel, a lot of being away from the family.
Yeah.
I actually kind of respect the fact that you're here in an amazing venue, people can come to you and you've got a thriving business. I guess that's the dream, that's really, for you, isn't it?
The amount of times I see Phil Kenyon in the airport.
Yeah.
You know, must be, he's here then everywhere.
Yeah.
And it must be challenging.
I did a little bit of it. I was away with Charlie and Georgia quite a bit. And that was great to do because you meet lots of people and you kind of, you know, it's fantastic. But that can be quite challenging. I remember once I was at the Open at King's Barnes. I had about five players there. And that's quite challenging when you've got players similar tee times. It's like, who do you stand with? And that was quite interesting. But no, I like being there. I love Woburn's a great club. I mean, we've got three great courses here, amazing short game area, and really nice club life. I live locally, so I can come in and do my coaching and do bits. So I'm not saying I wouldn't go on tour and do a bit, but I think you've got to balance everything, haven't you?
You've also not only teaching personnel, people can come here for in-person lessons, clinics. You also do, we've got a lot of international listeners and viewers, you online coach as well.
Yeah.
Don't yeah. through Skillist.
Really busy with that, yeah.
And is that, do you, and it's not a loaded question, do you find still great success on online coaching with students as well?
Yeah, totally. And there's a real reservation about whether online coaching works. Because sometimes you want to get your hands on someone. But I think in short game, it 100% works. And so, you know, people send their videos in, I'll sort of annotate over them, draw lines so they can see for themselves what they're doing. And then I'll do a video to camera saying about what they need to go into work on with some drills. And then they send them back and we go forward like that. And it works. Getting great results
for players. You don't need a simulator at home. You don't need
it. Some people do it in their garden. Yeah. Some people are doing it in their office.
Yeah,
and they're just swinging and hitting an airflow ball.
As long as you don't need to see the result as much. Obviously, a full swing, there's a lot more going on. But with a chip, you can look at the technique.
You can look
a lot
at the action. And I think online coaching will keep growing without doubt.
I wouldn't be surprised,
I mean, it's, I suppose to some degree, it's what I do online coaching videos. It's not much in person, but people will make notes. And that's why a lot of the stuff that we do online is not only, again, simple, very visual. We put lots of words on the screen as well for people who like to read it rather than just see it. But yeah, I think coaching's definitely changing. It's still a huge aspect of the game. It shouldn't be undervalued by at all. And people who want to improve need to ideally seek the best or you know, learn the best information. And for you, you've made it as easy as possible in person, online, or by the book.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully everyone can learn something.
And that's the thing. That's the benefits. I think the downsides of where we are still for a lot of amateurs. So it's just fitting's hard for wedges, and that needs to improve massively.
Yeah.
This place is an absolute exception because the short game facility is quite literally. It's the best I've ever been to. No questions asked. But most general golf courses where a lot of our listeners are members at or play at, you either have an all right putting green that's kind of near the clubhouse,
which you're not allowed to chip on.
You're not allowed to chip on.
Most
and then
of the time.
Very often, there's either no chipping green or it's a massive afterthought and it's a little piece of rubbish land in the corner. It's hard for amateurs to actually practice your chipping.
Yeah. It is hard. There's no doubt about it. I think the practice facilities in the UK generally, if you go somewhere like America or Dubai, it's like totally different.
Oh, yeah.
Like they really put much more of an emphasis on practice facilities than we do in the UK. You know, again, go back 40, 50 years ago, like nobody practiced, did they, in the UK? I mean, you know, it was just about
it was almost
playing
down
golf.
Onto some degree,
there was no
it?
Practice areas in a lot of courses. If you look at a lot of the classic courses, the practice facilities are just like non-existent, aren't they?
But also, they built the golf course and then the clubhouse.
Putting green, and then if there's anything left, they'll chuck a pin in it to chipping green.
Where anything built in the last 20 years has a much different...
Yeah, it's almost like I think you should build your practice facilities first and then build the course and clubhouse around that.
And in America, correct, it's the driving range that almost gets built first. Yeah. Well, that's the centre, and everything gets built around
that. The beginning of your experience, isn't it? You know, you go to the range, you've got your balls. But, you know, to answer your question, I think you can do lots from home. I think you really can. If you can video yourself and you can work through you know, what you're trying to do, your key points, and you can be creative, you know, you can just soft balls. Can you just go under the coffee table, over the coffee table, over the sofa, whatever under? That's still practice.
Yeah.
That is 100% still practice.
And I think probably going back to when I was a good chipper was when I was an assistant pro in the pro shop.
just
in the shop.
In the shop,
messing about, trying to hit shots over clothes and trying to hit shots over the counter and all these sorts of things. And like I said, the kid, how many chipping comps did we have as a kid?
Insane.
Yeah, like, playing for Mars bars, whatever,
were the best thing ever.
Yeah,
because it put you under pressure. You were competing against other players. You can test yourselves. You pick stupid shots, like you hit shots from in bushes or, you know, different shots that you want to play. You play creative. I think more of that needs to happen as we grow up and become adults as well, like chipping comps.
Well, we've got one on the go at the minute. We were at the Grove yesterday. It's currently 6-all, so we've got the settle, haven't we?
Ooh,
which my money might be on you now, Rick, after this.
You know what's really funny? So we do. We've had a couple of chipping comps recently. Last time, I actually just about pipped
it. You did?
But what's funny, so we do alternate picks. It's not winner picks, alternate.
Okay, I like that.
It's quite good.
All my shots are on fluffy lies.
Or bunker shots.
I'm about 15 yards. Guys, are tight yards, tight lies, really close to the green.
You
but
knows,
it's been good.
Knows how to get you.
It's helped, though, because that's giving you the hard shots you don't want to do, the ones that I don't want to do, kind of combination. It's quite competitive. We have a laugh. And
you can't beat
fun.
It. And then one thing I would say with juniors, I don't see it quite as much. The whole juniors round the green as much as I used to do. So I'd encourage it for juniors to start doing that again more and more. You know, if he's playing for a pro V1 or whatever, it's just honestly, it means everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I'd also say to juniors, get the 60 degrees out of your hand. just try and learn to chip with a little bit less loft. And I know you might think, you know, for one shot in particular, you need that 60. But yeah, if you start to chip with less loft, like we did a little bit today, you learn to release the club. Mm. You learn to try and play a softer shot with a stronger loft. It's so powerful.
Yeah.
And then, put a 60 in your bag and go and play. But sometimes when you're going for 9 holes, just go out and have your maximum loft to say 54 and see what you can do.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And you've got to get that creativity. And I think the flair back in juniors, I think it's slightly lacking because there's too much loft in their hands from too early age these days.
Well, it's a little bit like then the stories of Seve trying to hit 3 irons out of bunkers.
Brilliant, yeah.
Mm. So if you hit a 3 out of bunker, so you put a sand wedge in your hand,
it seems easy. You've got that aspect. And also just mechanically, you know, how do you do it? Like, how do you hit a high shot? Well, you get low, you cup your wrist more.
Yeah.
And that's how you do it. And you get your 3 iron looking like a 9 iron at the top or whatever. Yeah. And you can play the shot. And then you take that into your sand wedge and say, okay, let's try, let's drop it down like we did a bit in the bunker. Yeah. Can we play a higher shot, a bit more spin? So you can learn two ways from that.
Well, Dan, that has been amazing.
Awesome.
I think listeners and viewers will have picked up a lot there. I'm going to watch this back many times. I'm going to watch that lesson back many times. So I just think, like I say, it's a part of the game that players struggle with. And to have a system and almost a manual. Like, it feels a bit like there's someone there saying, no, we've
follow
got
this. Yeah.
It's 1, 2, or 3. Mm-hmm. And once you learn those things, we'll put a link to the book down below. So if you want to check it out, I'd highly recommend it. Worldwide shipping?
Yes, it's available on Amazon worldwide, yeah.
Wow.
And is it 30% did we say?
35 in agreed on.
35,
we'll
great.
We'll talk later.
Guys, thanks for watching. Be sure to follow Dan on his social media. Let's blow him up. Over 150,000 followers on Instagram would be amazing. We're going to have some lunch. We're going to play some golf. Thanks for watching. See you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with purchase.